0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon. You are very welcome to Liveline. Katie Hannan with you until 3 o'clock on this Friday afternoon. And I'm right now looking at a picture of Simona Halep of Romania, the tennis player who I think most of us will have heard by now suffered a panic attack in the middle of her second round match at the French Open yesterday. She's got a doctor with her, a coach with her. She's got her head in her hands, but she didn't actually manage to come back from that and she had to withdraw. And I think a lot of people will know how she felt at that moment of time. Siobhan O'Donnell, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Katie.
You know exactly how she was feeling.
I do. I had my one and only panic attack about 8 or 9 years ago, and it's related to motorway driving, but it's utterly debilitating. It's really scary, and you come out very shaky and quite emotional after it.
And tell me,
that's fantastic that she spoke out so publicly about it.
Yes, and of course people will know you are the Siobhan O'Donnell that people will know as the face of and the voice of the Dublin Airport Authority for many, many years. So this is something that has been going on in your life or is part of your life for a long time.
It has. It happened when I tried to pinpoint it back, and I was talking to Brenda about pinpointing it back, and I've got a friend who lived over in Leopardstown at the time, and they were expanding the motorway, the M50, but in order to expand it they had reduced it down to one lane, narrowed it down, and there were cones on either side. And I'm not sure if it's claustrophobic related, because I felt I'd nowhere to go. However, I kept pushing through it because I didn't want to be thinking that it was an issue. But even by doing that, it was becoming an issue, if you know what I mean. And it all came to a head then when I was driving to Lacken to cemetery mass. My grandmother is buried down there in a beautiful little cemetery down in Lacken in County Wicklow. And myself, my mum and my sister are going to the mass. And I said, no, I'll drive, because my sister was coming in from Dalí and does a lot of driving. And I said, no, I'll do the driving, because I really wanted to not to be an issue. Feel the fear and do it anyway.
At this stage, Siobhan, your family obviously knew that you had anxiety around being on the M50.
Well, I didn't really acknowledge it to a large degree then. I kind of was keeping it very low key and damping it down because I didn't want it to become an issue. So on the way back, I drove down, and on the way back I was congratulating myself. I actually said out loud to them, gosh, I'm really delighted with myself. I had no issues driving down and back on the motorway. I feel really happy about that. And as I was coming off the exit four at Ballymun Junction, bang, I just started heavy breathing, rapid breathing then, and instantly they knew exactly what was happening to me. And wow. I just started shaking, and my sister Mel had, you're okay, take in deep breaths. My sister had her hand on my shoulder, my mum had her hand on me, you'll be all right. You think it's going on for ages, it's only about 10 seconds, but it completely and utterly shakes you and rocks you, so much so that I haven't been on the motorway since. I'll drive all around the world to get to where I need to go. My brother's in Laytown, my sister's in Dalík, but I will not drive on the motorway. I just have a fear of it now. And
that is a huge burden on your life. But it sounds, the way you describe it there, Siobhan, it sounds like that the physical symptoms came on you before you the anxiety came on you, if you know what I mean. That it was if you take me back, you're in the car, you're driving along, you're delighted with yourself,
delighted,
as you say,
myself. You
think you've broken the back of this, and you're
yeah,
fine. And then, like, literally out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere. And that was, it was a complete shock that it actually just came on me out of absolutely nowhere. And, your whole body is just taken over by this, and you're shaking and you're breathing and you can't even think straight. Like, you're kind of going, what the hell is happening to my body, my head? My sister, my mom, they just were brilliant. I was so grateful that they were in the car with me at the time, that they were able to help me through it and
I was going to say, what speed would you have been doing when this happened?
Actually, I wouldn't be a fast driver anyway, but coming off the slip road, it would have been, I would have well reduced my speed at that stage in any event. And I'm, I'm always a person who sticks to the limits. But, you know, I'm actually even at the stage now where I'm anxious if somebody else is driving on the motorway and I'm in the car. You know, I kind of have to look away and busy myself. And I don't know, seeing the cars going by, or feeling of claustrophobia, I'm not sure. It can be overwhelming then, because you don't want to make it an issue, but in trying to not make it an issue, you're making it an issue.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean.
And is that the single actual panic attack you've had in your whole life?
It is, yeah, it is. And it completely changed everything. Like, I won't drive. Look, I can get away, I can get around it. It's not completely debilitating, but, you know, I could feel that it could get worse.
Yeah,
you know,
it's mighty inconvenient, Siobhan. I'm trying to imagine how my life would be if I couldn't go on the M50 or on any motorway.
Yeah, no, it is. There's no doubt about it that it is. And, you know, I did go for help. I went for CBT, cognitive behavioural therapy. However, I didn't really click with the therapist, I think. And on the second session, he encouraged me to simulate a panic attack. So I had to breathe really rapidly for about 90 seconds, I think it was, or a minute, I can't remember which. But at the end of it, you almost feel you're shaking, your rapid breathing, as if you've had a panic attack. But it was kind of like, well, you just have to go out and do it, you know, kind of feel the fear and just go out and do it. And I it's okay if I go out and kill myself, but I don't want to go out and kill anybody else. It's not that I feel I'm going to... You could feel you might bring the car. It's funny, it's in your head. You feel you want to pull the car in a direction. You're not going to do that. You really aren't. I know that that's not going to happen. But your irrational fear won't allow you to bring you to that place that's going to happen.
Have you spoken to your mum and your sister about how they felt when they were in the car when the driver was having a panic attack?
Absolutely. I mean, they were hugely sympathetic. They knew exactly what was happening to me, and, you know, they were fantastic support, and they're brilliant. Like, if we need to go anywhere, my sister steps in. She's super, Fiona. You know, I have to get out of driving on the motorway because I have to find an alternative, because I just won't do it. I'm too fearful.
And did you know almost immediately what it was? Because I know some people have panic attacks. They actually think there's something else happening, that it's a heart attack or that some other health issue has kicked in.
No, I knew immediately, Katie, because I could sense that this was building up in me over time, that, you know, whatever was happening regarding the driving and on the motorway, I could feel it was creeping up. So it was progressive. It was progressive. It was coming. It was definitely coming. And I just wonder, you know, has anybody else had similar experience as well on a motorway in particular, or is this just I don't know whether it's me. I'm sure I'm not the only person who's had issues with driving on the motorway. And I had this fear that if I did give it a go, that I would just leave the car and run away if I couldn't. If I got another attack or see one coming on, I'd just park in the car, children, and just have to say bye to that. And I don't want that to happen, you know.
Yeah, it almost sounds like, and I just, ironically, you being a Dublin Airport Authority ex, it sounds like that the fear of flying that some people kind of just suddenly in, you know, midlife can develop. It seems that the symptoms are not dissimilar.
No, I think you're right. And, you know, I've driven the length and breadth of the country. I had no issues. Years ago, I drove from San Francisco down to LA on a 6-lane highway. I just don't know what the reason is for it. I can't explain it, but that is, and I really wanted to come on just to, you know, maybe if anybody else has this issue, might help them.
Yeah, well, I actually, on another line, if you want to stay there, Siobhan, because I have somebody who has a very similar issue. Joan, good afternoon, Joan.
Hello, how are you?
Good. You also have anxiety around driving.
I have, yeah. I can't go on the motorway at all.
But it dates back to a specific incident in your case, Joan.
I could drive for years. I'm over 40 years driving. And this really got bad in the last couple of months. It's anxiety. I have to pull in and then go another bit and then pull in again. And that's the way it's going with me.
But Does this not date back to a car crash that you were in many years ago?
Many years ago, but I could drive after that, no problem.
Oh, right. Okay. So even though you were in a... if you wouldn't mind, tell us about the car crash just so people understand how serious it was.
Well, it was serious enough now. It was back in the 70s. But it didn't bother me driving. I drove to Donegal and all after it. It didn't bother me at all.
You do, because I know of other people in my own life that have, you know, post a car crash, have really, yes, really difficulty getting back into the car and back behind the wheel. But that you got over that, no problem.
I did, unless now it's something that's subconscious.
But you've, as you say, spent, you know, obviously decades driving since that car crash.
Oh, decades.
Were you injured in that crash, or was there anybody?
I was. Yeah.
Badly?
No. Well, it was mostly my face.
Right.
Yeah.
But
I got over that.
But you got over that.
Yeah.
Back into the car, no problem at all. And then, can you pinpoint the moment where you realised you were getting anxiety about driving recently?
Well, I was going up, I liked to go to Connemara. Maybe twice a year I was going to Connemara. But this started then, I don't know what brought it on. I really don't know. It's just this panic, I guess. It's like, I have such heavy breathing and that. It's fear. It's pure fear on the road.
It sounds very similar to the panic attack that Siobhan described having.
Yeah, and I cannot, and I wouldn't even try going on a bypass or one of them, because I wouldn't be able to get off it. I'd have to stay there.
And Camir, have you, like Siobhan, tried to get help for it? Have you talked to anyone about it?
Well, I spoke to my old doctor, and she referred me, not yet, I didn't get a word back yet, to Galway, a psychologist in Galway.
So I didn't get
word back yet.
Okay, but you're waiting for an appointment,
to talk to somebody about it. Yeah.
And when it did happen to you that first time a while ago, like, how did you actually get yourself out of the situation you were in? Like, did you pull in, or were you able to calm yourself?
What would have taken 3 hours would have taken me maybe 5-6.
So again, you were driving from where to where?
When I go to Connemara, I wouldn't go on a bypass. I go the old road, the old Galway road.
Right.
It's stopping and going off again another bit and stopping, and if there's any traffic behind me at all, then I get real panicky altogether.
God, it's incredible, isn't it, though, that you've been driving without a problem at all for all those years.
Without a problem all them years. And my sister is great now. When she's with me, like, if I was the one that was happening to her, I wouldn't be able to get into the car. But she does help me. She does.
Yeah, and and Siobhan, you were saying the same. Your sister has been an incredible support to you as well.
Yeah.
Both my mum and my sister. And, you know, as my mum said, look, you can live your life without going on the motorway, you know. She didn't, in other words, don't be putting pressure on yourself, undue pressure on yourself where you don't need to.
Yeah.
You know, very supportive like that. But actually, an accident would hypnotherapy work, and I don't know whether that would be a solution to it. But would you believe, I'm actually with my mum now, and I have to go because we're bringing her car for the NCT, which will not involve driving on any motorway.
Okay, Siobhan, I'll let you go, and best of luck with the NCT.
Thanks very much.
And many thanks for sharing that story
with
us. I think it'll resonate with a lot of people out there, as it has already with Joan. Joan, hang on, I want to bring in Anne-Marie now. Anne-Marie, good afternoon.
Hello, hi Kay, how are you? How are you? Katie, isn't it?
It's
sorry.
Katie, yeah.
How are you?
Yeah, Anna-Marie, you also have had panic attacks.
Yeah, but
you know, not related to driving now. Explain your situation.
They put mine down to being PTSD from, I was very sick a long time ago. I have Crohn's disease and I was in hospital for over a year and two complications, you see, and it took me a long time to get back to being what we call normal, being able to do anything for myself.
Yeah.
And I was just out, went out with my mum shopping. We actually went into a charity shop, I'm a real Piccarini. And no problem at all, looking around, all of a sudden I felt this horrible feeling come over me and I couldn't pinpoint what it was. And it was like, the only thing I can describe it is like hot molten lava going through your veins. And then all of a sudden my heart went completely into overdrive. And it was actually going against my breath and I couldn't catch my breath. And I kind of said, no, I'm all right. And then I said to my mum, I've got to get out of here. And it was like I was suffocating. Got out, got into the fresh air. And my mum said, geez, what's wrong with you? And I was like, I don't know, something just coming over me. And I could, my heart was still beating. And I said, mum, I'm having a heart attack or something. Of course, she panicked. And a stranger going by was helping me and he told me to keep a deep, deep breath and try and clear your head and just concentrate on your breathing and get back to normal. And it passed, thank God. And I just put it down to one of those things. I had no idea what it was. And I thought maybe it was just being nervous, you know, after being out, after being sick and everything just came upon me. And I just thought it was one of those things.
And how long was that, Anna-Marie, since, you know, after you had gotten out of hospital?
Well, it took me about a year to get back to kind of, I had to learn to walk and all. I was so long in bed and everything in hospital. But I say I was a year out of hospital. And then by the time I got to doing normal everyday things, about 3 months again after that, about three months later, and I had no idea what it was. And then we went for another drive up the Dublin Mountains and we were admiring the scenery and all of a sudden I got that feeling again. And it was a smothering feeling. And I eventually went to the doctor and I said, there's something wrong with me. And told her all my symptoms and she more or less said to me, it's a panic attack. And I was going, well, a panic attack, that just happens to people who are nervous all the time. And I wasn't nervous. I totally took it wrong. Most people think with a panic attack that you're panicking and then you have an attack. No, I've been sitting watching TV, enjoying the company of other people, and the feeling just comes on me and I've got to get out of the room and just cope with it. It doesn't happen very often, but when it does, I know now the triggers. I'm just either I've stressed myself out or I'm tired. And it's like you can describe, say, a volcanic eruption. So much you can stress, you can take on, and then all of a sudden it will develop into a panic attack. And it's all going back to a fear, with me, it's a fear of dying. And no matter how many times I've seen people pass, there's a lot, you just have that in the back of your mind because it all happened, not once. Twice, I went through a really horrific time in hospital.
Yeah, you.
I didn't tell my family in the middle of one of these panic attacks, which was only about 6 months ago. I love you all. If I hadn't actually died because my heart had gone into such overdrive, I love you all. And you have done great things. My mum keeps telling me, shut up, you're grand. It's going to pass. So it really makes you panic. It's not that you panic and have the attack. The attack makes you panic because it's a fight or flight feeling.
Yeah. It's I have to say I have never had a panic attack. I've had it described to me many times. It just sounds
it's because
so
it comes
frightening.
Out of nowhere.
Yeah. Yes.
And you can't basically it's you don't know why this is happening. And half of you is kind of like, I don't want people to see this happening. That can also add to the pressure. But like I even feel now my heart at the moment is talking to you because I'm really in the panic attack, if you know what I mean. But they are the most horrible, horrible things to experience. And I used to know someone who used to say she had panic attacks, and I used to think it's a touch of the knee syndrome. And it's an awful thing to think until you have it yourself. And then when I hear someone who's had a panic attack, I completely understand. And it's an awful, awful thing to have.
Yeah, Anna-Marie, will you stay there and we'll try? And your line is going a bit ropey.
Sorry,
there.
Yeah.
And just we'll see if we can get you on a better line because. You obviously have great insights into this and, you know, have been dealing with it for a long time. So I'll hopefully be able to come back to you. In the meantime, we're getting a lot of calls in on this and I want to go to Deirdre now. And Deirdre, ironically, you are about to get into your car.
But, I am.
But you also have a panic around driving.
I do. It's somewhat better than it was, but probably 5, 6, 7 years ago, to get into the car and go on the roads or a motorway was a huge problem. Like, it was awful, really awful. Like Anna Marie and Siobhan before me there, literally the whole panic, the nerves, everything. Like, I'd have to pull in on the side of the road and stop and just stay until it had passed.
And did this again, like, is there something you can trace this back to? Did it come out of nowhere? When did it start?
Out of nowhere. Probably, actually, it's probably longer. It's probably 10 years ago. Just one day I was driving. I can't even remember, but I just remember the feeling that came over me all of a sudden out of nowhere. And I don't think I was even on a motorway, so I was able to pull in quite quickly. But it was extremely frightening, and it leaves you shook. Like, it really leaves you shook for, you know, a couple of days afterwards. It's awful, absolutely awful.
And describe it. How does it manifest in you? Is it breathing? Is it your heart? How does it feel?
It's breathing, it's your heart. It's a feeling that you can't describe. It's this tightness. You almost feel like you can't breathe, and that you have to tell yourself you can breathe, that you're okay. Like, the way I have learned to deal with it is, like, I talk to myself. Because I just keep saying to myself, you're okay, this will pass, this is fine. And I literally kind of do the staggered breathing where I breathe in, hold for 5, breathe out, count to 5, just to try to get myself back into the moment and to stop myself running away with it.
Yeah. And how often has this happened to you, Deirdre?
Oh, my goodness. I couldn't even tell you how many times. Like, I feel I have it more under control now. But, like, if I was to, say, even go to IKEA, I would put a huge amount of thought into that, into actually getting into the car and going on to that motorway. And it was funny, Siobhan said the M50, that's what made me turn up the radio straight away, because what I used to feel, even coming from the airport, and this probably sounds a bit ridiculous, but I used to be so afraid that the car would go over the bridge at the Strawberry Beds. And for what reason, I don't know. It was unbelievable.
So you'd kind of picture that happening?
Yes, for no reason whatsoever. Like, it's awful. It is awful what it does to you. It's horrific. And like Anna Marie saying, she's not an anxious person or anything, neither am I. But it's just something, it almost comes over you without control. It's awful.
And is it all totally related to driving for you?
Mostly, yes. I would kind of associate it with driving. And again, it mightn't happen for 6 months, but it could happen continuously then for a little while.
And do you still drive, though? You I have to say, you're about to sit into the car.
I'm a mom with little kids, and they have to go to matches and collect it from school. And just for normal day-to-day things, you have to drive. Well, I have to drive personally, but I couldn't let it overcome me, because it would have just the reality of it would have been too bad, like. But it's awful. I really sympathise with anyone who suffers with it. And it's actually lovely to hear people speak about it, because it's awful. It's awful.
Yeah, well, clearly it's a huge issue. We've got another caller. Hang on, Deirdre. We've another. Kira, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you?
You have the exact same problem.
No, it's not that acute. It does happen the odd time. And the reason I called, actually, was to reassure, was it Siobhan who was talking about originally, was to reassure that, you know, there's other people out there who get this. Yeah, happened to me maybe 15 years ago, driving to a friend's house in the evening on the motorway. And just, yeah, that same feeling that the woman described it really well, like really hot laugh going through your veins and increased heart rate and shaky, you know, stomach like a stone, you know, and then just... I had loads of experience in meditation and Tai Chi and things, so I just managed to control it with my breathing. But I was shook after it. And then it would come on the odd time, usually just going fast and on motorways where there's no hard shoulder. And
what is it about the motorways? Is it the sense that you're not entirely in control of your environment? Or
I think it's the speed. To be quite honest, it's nothing more for me than just velocity. Do you know, like, I think we forget so often, you know, we're driving tons of steel at a really high rate, and it's not like 60 miles an hour. If you have an impact, it's much more than 60 miles an hour, you know.
Okay, so if you keep talking now, Kira, none of us will ever get into the car again. But like, you know, if you think like that, you would actually never put yourself into one of these tons of metal.
And I think that's why people get frightened of flying as well, because logically, when you think about it, it's terrifying, you know. But so it comes and goes. And when I had my first child, I couldn't go. I used to go to all sorts of crazy routes to get around the city without going on the motorway, you know. And just to say, like, maybe hypnotherapy work, I don't know, but I definitely found mindfulness and also, you know, and breathing and meditation. But also, I used to notice it. It was when I was overwhelmed and knackered with the rest of my life. You know, like if I was very tired chronically and not eating properly, and I think the body just feels overwhelmed. And this is the safety mechanism.
That was Anna Marie's point, that she knows now that it's, you know, when you push your body to a certain point, and then it just kind of tips into this panic attack zone.
It's a really handy marker in some ways, you know, when it happens. It's like, all right, I got to reassess my life here and my quality of life, and what am I doing wrong, and slow down. And then it sort of balances out again. So it can, if you use it in that way, it can be useful.
Yeah, but I must say, the idea that this could come upon you when you're on a motorway in particular, I suppose, is a pretty terrifying prospect.
It is, because I could drive around rural Ireland all the time, no bother. It's just that speed. And I think, you know, that you can't get off. You know, there's a whole load of stuff around it maybe, but that it's the speed. And like that, it comes, and I could drive, you know, to Dublin or Waterford or whatever, and it would be fine. Most of the time, it's just the odd time it'll come along.
And you mentioned there, you said when you had your first child, was that just because you were running around with a child, or is it? I know that some people will talk about how their attitude towards risk and risky scenarios and possible danger changes hugely once they have children, because the jeopardy gets so much bigger, you know.
Yeah, I think that's natural. I think your protective instincts are just, you know, kicked in nice and healthy, and I think that's normal. I wouldn't think that's a bad thing, you know.
Yeah, well, but if you're prone to panic attacks, it probably isn't great, you know, if that's where that places you.
Well, that's true, yeah.
Anyway, so you want, you, as you say, you just wanted Siobhan to know she's not alone, and and we say, well, she definitely isn't. Deirdre, all of that is very familiar to you.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, very familiar. And I agree, actually. Sorry, I missed that lady's name.
That's Kira.
Kira, about the breathing and the mindfulness. And that is huge. I think just to try, not even, I don't know if to say, to keep yourself in check is the right way to say it, but just to keep you in the moment, basically, just to assure yourself that you are fine and you are going to be fine. That, you know, this will pass, because I think you have to try and manage it for yourself personally, because it is so, it's such a horrific feeling that it could prevent you doing so many things. It's awful.
Yeah. Okay. Deirdre, many thanks for that. Kira, thank you. We'll take a break, but we've many more callers who have experiences they want to share on this after these.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And I want to bring in Paul now. Paul, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie.
Yeah, you, a very unusual one, I think. You get them in your sleep, is it?
Yeah, I get them in my sleep, yeah. I wake up and I think I'm wake up in a ladder of sweat, and I think I'm actually choking. I'm find it difficult, awful difficult to breathe. And the first thing I do is go for the window. I feel I need to get outside. And my heart is going 90 miles an hour. And it lasts for a few minutes. My wife kind of comforts me and tells me everything is all right. But it's absolutely terrifying, because I think I'm going to get a heart attack, and I find it awful hard to breathe and choke. And I've been to my GP, and he's done various tests and heart tests and all. Everything is okay. He assures me of that. He had a heart monitor on me for 24 hours and all that kind of stuff. But I wouldn't get them every night now. It's been quite a few weeks since I get them, but I do get them occasionally, and Jesus, I'm terrified of them. First thing I think of when I'm going to bed, am I going to get one tonight, you know?
Oh, that's a horrible, horrible thing to take into the bedroom with you. How long has this been happening, Paul?
Oh, happening over a number of years, probably 3, 4, 5 years.
The very first time must have been really terrifying.
Oh, it was, yeah. It absolutely was. And they seem to get worse and worse, you know, as you go along, you know. And there's nothing you can do. And you just sit on the side of the bed for a few minutes and you calm down, and eventually you're relaxed again, you know, and go back to bed again.
And would this be on nights when you have been maybe particularly stressed during the day? Like, can you link it to anything happening in the daytime? No.
Absolutely nothing, no. Absolutely nothing. No, absolutely nothing. I'd go to bed as normal, happy as normal, and nothing bothering me or anything, and just out of the blue. And I just, the first thing I do is I just jump out of bed, actually. Jump out of it and head for the window. And I just feel I need to get out, and I'm out of breath, and I'm my heart is going 90 miles an hour, and I'm in a lather of sweat. So, you know,
I must say, and I'm feeling for your wife in this as well, Paul.
Yeah, she told me, she has reminded me often enough, you know,
that she's kind of getting the other side of these panic attacks. But and have they been able to tell you anything about, like, where they may be, you know, what might be behind them?
No, I've only been to my GP now, and he hasn't given any explanation for them whatsoever. He just assures me that my heart is fine and I'm nothing to worry about, you know.
Well, at least I suppose you know that, and you can, that can calm you down once
you... I know that, but when I jump out of the bed, I don't know that. Because, you know, I'm absolutely terrified.
It must be such a common thing. We're getting so many calls.
No, thank God, I have no problem on roads or motorways like your other callers, you know.
It's
just in my sleep, you know.
I know, but unfortunately, you can stay away from motorways. You can't really stay away from sleep.
You have to go to bed, yeah.
Yeah. Paul, we'll see if we have any other advice from anyone for you.
Okay.
Thank you very much for that.
All right, not at all.
Thanks, Paul. Valerie.
Bye-bye.
Valerie, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie. Thank you for taking the call.
Tell us your story, Valerie.
Well, I'm well into my 60s now. They started late in my 20s. I was attending counselling at the time through something that had happened to me when I was a child, and mine are stemmed from there. But like all the other callers that rang in, I could identify with nearly every one of the symptoms that they have. They were the most awful, awful, awful thing that I ever went through in my life, panic attacks.
And would they come in particular circumstances, or when you'd be doing something in particular?
Yes. I suppose one is when I was very stressed, when I was very tired, if there were issues going on in my life or whatever, things that I had to deal with, it was very much then. But many years ago, I came across a book, and it was an Irish lady wrote it, Dr. Áine Tuberty, and it was called When Panic Attacks, and with that came a disc, and that was my lifesaver. There are 7 stages to the disc, and she'll take you through each stage, and that, to me, was the turning point for me. Now, it took a long time. Don't take me wrong, Katie, it did take a long time, but I never thought I would be where I am today and say that panic attacks really are a thing of my past.
Are they? How long is it since you've had one?
I'd say a bad one. When I would say a bad one, with the tightness of my chest, wanting to vomit, thinking I'm going to swallow my tongue, can't sit still, I need to be out in the air, I need to keep walking, I cannot sit down at all. I'd say it's a good 6, maybe 7 years. Have I got niggly little ones? Yes, I did. But I go to the disc then.
And
that's when I go to the disc.
Okay, so the disc is, this is Dr. Áine Tuberty.
Áine Tuberty is her name. I believe the lady is just deceased. I believe that. I could be wrong,
yes,
but I do believe.
I have a note here.
She
passed away in, I think, 2011. But
she,
and this book was written in 2003.
Yeah, but I'm telling you, I'm just pleading with your listeners to go and get it. But equally, I think it is very, very important that their family read it. It's, you know, you do need the support. It's very difficult for somebody to understand you that hasn't gone through them or that have never experienced it. And they might think it's, and yes, some people will have only a once off. Mine were for years and years and years.
Yes.
You know, and they're draining, they're exhausting, you cannot function. The pain and that you'd have on your chest afterwards from the tightness in your chest, you know, but I just couldn't emphasize it enough about this book and the disc. I prefer the disc to the book. I prefer to listen to her.
And is the disc just a spoken version of the book, or is it
yes,
mindfulness?
It is. No, it's a spoken version of the book.
Right.
And then there are 7 stages to it. And she really recommends that you listen to it for the gentleman that was just on before me. While he's in bed, he could listen to it. And then you listen to it first thing in the morning before you get out of bed. But I've taken that with me halfway around the world, let me tell you. Because I have it downloaded onto a little shuffle, so I can take it on a plane, I can take it here, I can take it there, or whatever, you know, and it's like a comfort to me, knowing that it's there, you know?
Well, you're the first person we've spoken to today, Valerie, who was speaking to us from the other side of this, if I can put it that way, who has managed to, as you say, put this into your past.
And I do remember, Katie, sorry for now, I do remember somebody a long, long time ago telling me that you will burn them out. And I did not believe it. And that is the truth. I didn't believe it. I thought, no. But at that time, they were really bad. And the person said, you know, you will eventually, you know. And thank God, that's all I can say today. You know, it's been a long time. And the reason I rang was just maybe to give somebody else a little bit of hope, you know, because they are awful. They are very unpleasant.
I'm sure that a lot of people will want to know about that again. So it's the book is When Panic Attacks, and the author is Dr. Áine Tuberty. I presume it. I wonder, is it still in print? Is the only thing, Valerie?
I don't know. Do you know something, Katie? Because, you know, through life you come across people and they say, oh, look, I've panic attacks and this, whatever. And I have recommended it. I have an awful feeling you can get it online.
Yes. Well, often even when books are out of print, actually, you can go on eBay and places like that
and
you'll find it. When Panic Attacks. But you're saying that it changed your life in a way, Valerie.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I only listened to it the other evening. I was awake. I couldn't sleep. And I put it on. And it was her voice is lovely. It's just lovely to sit there and listen to it and knowing that nothing is going to happen to you. You are not going to die. You are not going mad. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know? And like, just her reassuring me in my ear that it's okay, you're going to be okay.
You must nearly know it off by heart by now, Valerie.
Oh, listen, stop the lights, like, definitely. You know, and I love, like, when it comes to the breathing section, I heard a lady saying, you know, that she breathes up to 5. Well, Áine will try and bring you to 8, but you start at 4. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
In 2, 3, 4, and then out, and then bring it to 5, 6, 7. And if you can't do it, you only go as far as you're able to. But like everybody that you've had on your show, I could identify with every one of them.
Yeah.
I've had them all. I've had all the symptoms, the sweaty hands, this urgency wanting to go to the toilet, cannot eat, cannot sit still. You just want to move all the time, you know?
Yeah.
Because you do think you're going to die. And it's that awful fear that comes over you. And she speaks to all of that in her disc.
It sounds like if we can't find the disc, we should call you, Valerie.
Well, I would certainly hand it over because I have it downloaded onto a
little shuffle. I'm saying we wouldn't need the disc. We just need to talk to you about it.
But you know, I've said of all days for something like this to come on, you know, or whatever. And then the fact that you can identify with it, you know. But I do think again, Katie, you know, for family members, please, please, you know, read up about it, you know, and support the person that's going through it. It's not a nice thing to be going through. We wouldn't wish it on anybody.
No.
People who suffer from them know what I'm saying. Do you know what I'm saying?
Valerie, would you hang on, Valerie? Because I've a lot of other people on the call, and you might be useful to them.
I will, of course, Katie. No problem.
Can I bring in John Mead. And just to say to people that if you want to leave us a voice note, you can use our WhatsApp number, leave a voice note there on 087 184 3709. That's 087 184 3709. John, good afternoon.
And good afternoon to you too. Yes, I haven't got a lot of time, but however, what I was told by a doctor once, because like the other callers have said, you know, you're not dying, you're not having a heart attack, etc., etc. So what he told me was, look, always carry a paper bag. Now, not a plastic bag, but a paper bag with you because it's slightly porous. And what you do is, when you suffer the panic attack, you cup it around your mouth and let the rapid breathing continue. That's not a problem. What will happen is, every time you breathe out, you're breathing out less oxygen than you had when you first breathed in. So then the next time you breathe that in, you're breathing in less oxygen and so forth. And it gets lesser and lesser and lesser. And you start feeling the tingling in the hands and the sweaty palms and all the rest. You start feeling that disappear. And about 5 minutes or so, just make sure it's well cupped around the mouth. And it works a treat. And, you know, if you're on a motorway or anywhere, pull into the lay-by at the side, get your paper bag out, and off you go. And it does work. I've had many, many experiences with that. I mean, the other alternative is medication.
Did you suffer much with this, Jan?
Oh, I did. I did, yeah. For, I suppose, 5 or more years. Briefly, I was in the office equipment maintenance business. And with multinational companies, the customer is king. And if they say they have a problem, you're going to have to be there now. And what they would sometimes do is you'd be maybe halfway to this job and they'd suddenly say, oh, you know, the king of customers has just called and he happens to be the other direction, but he's a very important client. Turn around, go round to him. And then every so often they'd be phoning, are you there yet? This customer keeps ringing us to say, when are you arriving? And you wouldn't believe the panic it just brings into you. And then when you get there, they say, how long is this going to take? I need this now.
So, okay, you're stressing me out even talking about it.
But this is the way, and I suffered that for years and years and years. And I had been on Valium. And unfortunately, I'm one of these people, you know, if you say, I say, you want it now. And I'll give it to you now. And to give you a good example of me, I used to set my watch every day. And if I said to a person, I will be there at 3 o'clock, I would stand on the doorstep and I'd watch the second hand going round. As soon as it hit the 00, I would press the bell. That's the sort of person I am.
But this is what brought you to these panic attacks then?
Yeah, because, you know, if I'm told do this, then I feel it's my responsibility and I have to do it. No matter what it takes, I have to get there and I have to do it. And happily, I'm retired now for 20 years. So panic attacks, happily, are things of the past. Thank goodness.
And you think that's because your life has changed based on you the stress
out of it? Well, yeah, because I'm my own boss now. I can come and go as I please. And believe it or not, the only reason I was sort of saying I don't have a lot of time is because we have a new kitten at home and I don't like to leave the kitten too long on its own. So I'm going to, when I finish you now, into the car and drive off to see the kitten.
Right, okay. What's your kitten called?
Tiger. Tiger. He's a little tabby with stripes.
Lovely, lovely. John, I let you go to Tiger. Many thanks for that. So the brown paper bag, and I know you'd have seen people use that technique. Yeah. And obviously it's very effective.
But just to emphasise again, do not use a plastic bag because it's not porous. The whole idea of the paper bag is if you overdid it, you will get some oxygen through the pores of the paper bag, but not a plastic bag.
Okay, paper bag.
So,
okay,
right.
Thank you, John.
I hope that helps.
I'm sure it will. Many thanks, John.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Anne, good afternoon. Do I have Anne?
Hello.
Hi, Anne.
How are you?
Good. So tell me your story. You also...
It's about travelling on motorways.
Yes.
The terrible fear that I have. I think I know the source because about 6 years ago, I was travelling from Malaga in a taxi to Nerja, and the driver was driving very, very fast, and I had no Spanish. So he was kind of quiet anyway, but I just said, well, slow down, please slow down, but he wouldn't. And we were on a motorway, I suppose, about 20 kilometres out from Nerja, and suddenly a very large old English sheepdog obviously must have got loose or something. He jumped the barrier, you know, the barriers that are on motorways.
Yeah.
He jumped the barrier anyway, and the car hit him front right hand side wing, which is where I was sitting in the passenger seat. And
in the right wing in Spain, the other side of the road. And the dog, God help him, hit the windscreen, smashed it, and then rolled down the bonnet and fell on the ground. And the guy never stopped, never just rolled over. And I can still hear the dog, the bones crunching.
Oh.
So I just sort of lost it. I had just like John there, your previous caller said, I had a paper bag of sweets that I was bringing out to friends of mine, and I threw them out and I started breathing into this bag to try and calm down. It must have worked because I think I did calm down, but when I got to the house, I staggered out of the taxi and this guy put his hand out for it to be paid, and I just said, no, I told him to wave him away, I wouldn't pay him. Took his registration number and I couldn't speak for nearly an hour with just pure shock. I spoke to neighbours afterwards. They said, look, you have his registration number, you can call the police, he will be prosecuted, etc., but he said, you'll have to stay in Spain until the court case comes up. So I had to let him away with it. So ever since, I panic. I'm a basket case on driving on a motorway.
Ever since that day, that has had a profound impact on you.
Oh, that caused it. I actually don't know if I have a panic attack, because if I were to drive from A to B on any motorway, I don't think I breathe at all. And then every now and again, I do take a deep breath, up to six or eight, hold it, let it out. But that's the way I have to travel. And like one of your callers said too, if I manage to look in the, I know you have to look in your rear view mirror, etc., as you're driving, and your side mirror, if I saw a juggernaut or a big truck or a car even that was behind me and was behind me for quite a while, I would start panicking I'd probably panic because of the size of the juggernaut coming. Is he going to hit me? B, if it was just the car, am I driving too slow? What am I doing? And I don't drive. I drive around about 100 kilometres, which isn't too slow for anybody. So I'm better off not looking in my rear view mirror. And when I get to my destination, then wherever it might be, I literally have to cut the engine and breathe.
But, I mean, what strikes me there is, I think if I felt like that, you wouldn't get me into the driver's seat of a car. I mean, you still persist in driving.
I do, because I don't want to give in.
It's very stressful, though. Have you sought help, Anne? Have you...
No, I just carry on.
Well, can I recommend When Panic Attacks, the book by Dr. Áine Tuberty?
Indeed, I will look for it.
I
don't know if that lady was talking about panic attacks. I don't know if this is a panic attack. This is pure a panic attack. I don't get hot and sweaty or anything like that. And sometimes I become aware that my hands are locked tight. My whole body is stiff, like I'm in a total cramp.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like, whatever. I mean, obviously, it's a lot of anxiety. I'm not going to be diagnosing you on air,
yeah.
Given my complete lack of any credentials to do so. Clearly, that has had a massive impact on your life.
Yeah.
Oh, and we're getting callers in. We're getting callers in to say that the book that was recommended, Dr. Áine Tuberty's book, is available in Easons. And again, it's called When Panic Attacks. I think there might be a run on it after today. And many thanks for that.
Thank you very much.
Many thanks. I'm going to bring
nice
in.
To thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Anne. Patricia, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you?
God, I'm reading about so many people have had trauma, so much trauma. Tell me your story, Patricia.
Well, first of all, I would have known about panic attacks, Katie. I worked as a nurse for years.
Mm-hmm.
I would have known about them, but I really hadn't a clue what they actually meant. But I was in a bad house fire where I was trapped and one person died and I was brought out unconscious. And
that's an extraordinary statement in itself, Patricia. Would this have been many years ago?
It's about 30 years ago.
Right. And you were sharing a house, obviously?
No, it was a house that was a sort of a get-together in, and it was an accident that somebody threw a liquid on the fire that they thought it was something else. But the whole house was gone in about 20 minutes. But I got trapped. I went the wrong way. And even though I'd have known all the drill from nursing, you do this for oxygen, you do that, but I went the wrong way. Well, I was pulled out of the fire, but I had damage to my lower lungs, but no other physical injuries. But it was sometime after that, immediately after that, when I came out of the hospital, if I sat into a car, if I accidentally hit my elbow off the little knob, you know, for locking the car, it was blind panic. It was, I'd lie in bed at night, and if the window was closed, even the light on the corridor, a hazy light on the corridor, I would think it was smoke. I would jump out of the bed outside looking in. The children would be, you know, grilling sausages or something like that on the cooker. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I'd see the bits of smoke, I was gone. I've got to the extreme where even if I went out to, a restaurant, I would watch for where the exit door was, but somebody just might sit closer to it than me. And this feeling of panic would, oh my God. And I'm thinking, can I get out that way? Can I get out that way? And it was to the point that my life was just totally unbearable. It was, I didn't know where to go. I didn't know what to do. I attended doctors. I tried everything. But the panic got to the point that I wasn't actually living. I was existing from one point to another. And then I came across somebody that did energy therapy. Now, it didn't change the panic, but it did decrease the intensity of it.
What's energy therapy now? Describe that to us.
There's a therapy called bioenergy, and I ended up training in it myself because of how it worked for me. And what it did, it decreased the intensity of it at an energy level, not at a thinking level. My GP sent me to a psychiatrist, and I said, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. He's talk. It doesn't work. But after one session of energy therapy, I actually slept for 12 hours for the first time in a year. And as each session, the intensity of it decreased. Now, I've worked as a therapist for over 30 years, but the panic would come back again if I overwork, if I take on too much, if it's like the wardrobe that's jammed, packed, and you put in one nice T-shirt, the whole lot falls out. So that element is still there, but I can cope with it. If I feel that I am going into a panicky feeling, I'll do the diaphragmatic breathing, I'll have a session of energy work, and what happened will never change. That trauma will be in my system for life. But as I was saying to your researcher, Katie, mm-hmm. a client came to me years ago who had been in a very, very severe drowning incident, and they went down and up and down. But what he used to do, he used to jump out of bed in the middle of the night and run round and round the fields. Pure panic. He couldn't get out. So the cause of a panic attack can be different from different for everyone.
Yeah, and indeed, and it can come out of nowhere, as we know from some of our callers today.
It can come out of nowhere. But sometimes, if it's traced back, it can be a child that was in a horrific accident. And when the memory is triggered, the person goes into the panic. And somebody else may drift through life and never, the memory is never triggered. So for me, at that age, it was severe trauma, if you know what I mean, because I had no incidents in childhood apart from getting belted with a camogie stick and things like that. But I had no severe traumas during childhood that would be a factor in the level of the panic.
Yeah, well, I mean, I suppose in your case, Patricia, it was fairly obvious that you had been through, you know, a life or death, a near-death experience.
It was a near-death experience,
So that, yeah.
But
you found your way back from it. Patricia, I'm just, honestly, our phone lines are absolutely hopping.
I can only imagine, because if everyone sat down and talked about panic attacks, very few have gone through life without having one.
Honestly, I'm feeling incredibly lucky right now that I haven't seeing the stories that are coming up before me. Patricia, I'll let you go. We've got to take another break, but we'll come back with more of this after these.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And as I say, lots and lots and lots of calls coming in with really incredible stories. Mary, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie.
Tell me your story.
Well, I'm even kind of nervous and upset, well, apart from talking on the radio. When I was pregnant, I was about 4.5 to 5 weeks pregnant. It was in January. I'll never forget the night. It was about 1:30.
4.5 months pregnant,
weeks,
is it?
No, weeks.
Weeks, so just pregnant. Yeah. You just knew you were pregnant.
Near 5, yeah. Just woke up one morning about 2:15 in the morning, and I've had a major panic attack. I would really haven't had that experience of a panic attack before. It was so profound. And from that day on until the day she's put into my arms, 34 weeks later, it was night and day, day and night, 24/7.
What, like rolling panic attacks?
Yeah, rolling. No sooner would one be over, and it could take 15 minutes to pass, and then it'd be gone maybe a minute, and then it'd be into another one. I never slept hardly for more than 1 hour at a time throughout my pregnancy.
And honestly, what did it feel like, those panic attacks? Were they severe?
Oh, so severe. They're profound. Yeah, just sense of us going to die and I'd lose the baby and I would probably go as well. And just the fear of the unknown, of the constant... I was afraid of having one then, and that became nearly a fear in itself because it just took my life over.
I can't imagine. I mean, I can't imagine having one of these. I can't imagine having, successive ones as the day and going through a pregnancy at the same time.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, there was very little understanding or help. And that's not what I'm really meaning. Well, it did, of course, affect me that you were seen nearly as a detention seeker. When you were pregnant, you were meant to be happy. Of course, I was so happy to be pregnant, but the fear of loss and the panic attacks were just took my whole life over, and there was no getting away from them day or night. Like, I didn't sleep more than an hour at night for over 35 weeks.
And when that baby was put in your arms then, Mary... Was that it? Was that the last panic attack you had?
I was hospitalised in the last 2 weeks of my pregnancy, so there was a sense of being not me being in control, but if anything went wrong, that I could be helped. From the moment she was put into my arms, it was like it flicked the light switch. It was literally that instant. And it has changed my life forever. I mean, I'm not a particularly religious person, but I think there must be some outer being there to have kept me on this land, on this world at those times, because I wouldn't wish it on anybody. I really wouldn't. And if any other pregnant woman was going through it, I would be so sad for her. I'd love to help them if I could.
Yeah, and to let them know that, yeah, in your case and maybe in other people's cases, that it was very directly related to the fear around the loss of a baby and whether or not you'd make it through the pregnancy.
Yeah. And it was night and day.
And you came out the other side. Well, fair play to you, Mary. That seems incredible that you kept it together for all those months and lived through all of that and lived to tell the tale.
Yeah, and I'm very grateful for that, to be honest. Yeah, and to have a healthy girl now. That was the prize at the end of it. It was a hell of a journey, and I know that word is often used, journey, but
hell of a journey. But incredible prize as well, Mary.
Oh, wonderful! Yeah, absolutely blessed.
Mary, many thanks for that. I'll go to Jodie now. Jodie, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie. How are you?
Okay, so you also went through a near-death experience.
I did. It was in the hospital and I had a couple of operations and I ended up getting sepsis and I ended up a couple of times nearly snuffing it, as we say, but thankfully I'm around to tell the tale, and I'm great now. I'm a lot better now than what I was, and whatever. But the minute I came home from hospital, I started these panic attacks, and I didn't know what they were. I hadn't an idea of where they came from or how or what. So within, I'd say, a couple of weeks, I went to this fantastic counsellor, and he told me how to deal with it in three stages. Mm-hmm. stage one was call your panic attack by a name. So I called my panic attack Sam. And don't know where the name came from, just out of my head. And when he said, when you feel the panic attack, it starts kind of in your arm, going up your arm. You feel it coming into your system. He said, what you do is you talk to your panic attack. So what I did was I used to say, hi, Sam. I know you're coming to attack my body. I know my blood pressure is fine. My heart is fine. I'm not getting heart attack. You're not going to kill me. So do what you have to do and carry on. So I did that. And he also told me, the counselor told me, don't ever breathe. Don't ever take these deep breaths through your panic attack, because he said you're going against the attack. So he said, what you do is, he said, you wait until the panic attack has left your body and then you do your breathing. Casey, I have to say, I found this fantastic. Oh my goodness, because I was getting up to 20 to 30 panic attacks a day.
20 to 30 a day.
Oh, absolutely. It was absolutely the thing. But he had said to me, Josephine, he said, it's PS, you know, the PSTV.
Post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yes, yeah. And he said it was because you actually, your life was laid out in front of you, because I could hear, as I was going into a coma, I could hear the consultant saying, this lady is going to die tonight. And I was in the bed and I was trying to say, but I'm not, I'm going to be fine, I'm going to get through this. So he said, you were faced with your mortality, and that's what brought on the panic attacks and all the medication and all the different things and whatever. So before I went to him, I went to my own doctor, and my own doctor put me on medication, Xanax and all the different things and whatever. So within two to three weeks or more, I was able to come off of everything. And
just by
fine.
Using this
yes,
method?
Yes, absolutely. You just talk to it. You talk to the panic attack, call it a name. And even sometimes now, when I like that lady on the motorway, I could be on the motorway and the car's whizzing past and whatever, and I could feel myself going, ooh. So I just say, okay, I know I'm not going to, you know, I'd talk to it again and I'd say, okay, Sam, if you're coming, come, but I know you're not going to kill me. But that's the main thing. See, when you get a panic attack, you think you're getting a heart attack.
That seems to be that it's the physical sensation overtakes your body. And do you still get them though, Jodie? Yeah,
I wouldn't know. No, not a lot now. Tell the God's honest truth, not a lot. I was going down to my daughter's one day, and I kind of got very shaky on the motorway, and I kind of said, "Oh, look at." You know, this is I won't say it's nothing. It is when you feel it's coming on you, you feel, oh my goodness, you're feeling your brain, especially when you're on the motorway, you say, oh, where am I going to go? What am I going to do? But just gently, just talk, you know, just talk to it and just say, you know, what I said that day was, oh, please don't hit me now. I'm not able for you now. I'm on a motorway and I don't want to kill anybody. Just go away and leave me alone.
And
you know?
It's always been Sam. You never had a panic attack by any other name.
No, it was all, I don't know where Sam came from. It just, that was the day he said, my counselor said to me, call your panic attack, give it a name. You have to just give it a name. And that's what I did. And Katie, where Sam came from, I don't know, just the first name that came into my head, and that's what I've always used. But thankfully, I haven't got panic attacks in about 3 years now.
Oh, brilliant. And listen, Jodie, that's really useful information, I think, for people out there. And I've got somebody else on another line who is a similar method. But you know what? I need to take a break, and I'm going to come back to that after these. Jodie, many thanks for that.
Not a bother. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jodie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And I'll bring in Gary now. Gary, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie.
You were listening to Jodie there. It sounds like you have similar approaches to dealing with these attacks.
Yeah, I had a couple of decades of panic attacks and through my 20s and 30s. And eventually I just had to try and understand what's going on. So I read up on it a bit. And
was there any particular trigger for them for you, Gary? Was there any event?
It would usually happen at night. I think one of your previous callers had something similar, you know, just falling asleep. I drowned when I was a child, and I think that
you drowned. Well, obviously you didn't drown, but you almost drowned.
Well, I died. I had to be resuscitated.
Wow, that's what age were you?
I was 4.
Wow,
so that experience.
And do you actually remember that as an actual memory or a story you've been told now?
I know it as a story that I've been told, but memory wise, I'm not sure. I'm not sure if I remember it or not.
Yeah.
But the thing that the science bit as such was that while you're having, I just thought this might be useful for somebody else because it really worked for me.
Mm-hmm.
And is that when the panic attack hits, there's an initial feeling of it coming on, and then it really hits you, and that's when you're pumped full of adrenaline. And it's going to last about 3 minutes. So you already have 3 minutes of adrenaline in your system that you can't do anything about except, you know, panic. You know, you feel panicky. You have all the palpitations, everything. And that's not going to change for 3 minutes. So the trick is to accept that horrible feeling and then focus on just calming down your breathing after about 3 or 5 minutes, it will go. But if you resist it, if you fight it, if you panic while you're having it, it'll just cause more adrenaline to be pumped into your system, and it can go on for longer and longer. So that's what I read anyway. That's the science bit.
Yeah.
And it worked for me. It works. I rarely get them now because I can actually kind of prevent it from coming on at the very early stage. When you feel it coming on, I recognize it, and then I can actually calm myself enough for it not to happen. But once the adrenaline kicks in, then you have to go through it for at least 3 minutes.
So you can say to yourself, it's okay, this is just the adrenaline. So just knowing the science of it gets
this
you over
just
it.
Adrenaline in my system to get me to jump out of the way of the bus or the truck or out of the house or something, you know, from the, you know, from the fire. This is a reaction, to get you out of a dangerous situation. But the thing about it is that when it hits you out of the blue for no reason, you don't know what it is. You don't know. You know. You think you're having a heart attack or something, but it's really adrenaline in your system, and the panic is actually your reaction to the adrenaline in your system. And what you can control is your reaction. So if you can understand what's happening to you and then control your reaction to it, it's kind of a cognitive behavioral thing, I think.
Yeah.
But you can control your reaction. You can feel, experience it, recognize what it is. Like the lady said there, your previous contributor, you can kind of name it for what it is and recognize it. And then, step back in a way from the panic and the reaction and focus on your breathing and calming down your breathing.
Okay. Gary, that sounds very, very helpful and very useful way to look at it.
It's useful for somebody. I can understand the feeling, all right.
Yeah. Gary, many thanks for that. I have to take another break.
Joe Duffy. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And we're nearly out of time, but I do want to get to Lisa. Lisa, good afternoon.
Hi, Casey. How are you? Please excuse my voice. I have a dreadful head cold.
You get these panic attacks in your sleep,
yeah,
but it's this locked
sleep.
In, this locked in
it's
syndrome.
Called, apparently, it's called locked in syndrome. In my sleep, I get I'm stiff. My arms and legs won't move. My eyes won't open, and it's just horrific. You think like somebody's going to find me. You think I'm dead, and nothing is going to make this stop. And you can't wake because you can't talk to anybody because nothing is working and you're just lying there stiff and you can't wake up. And then eventually, I don't remember what happens afterwards, but it's horrific what it's going on.
And do you get this often, Lisa?
Every couple of weeks, I would say, at the moment, yeah. It's been going on for about 7 years now.
And you haven't been given any advice on how to deal with them?
No, nothing. They said if it was during my waking hours, they could do something for me, but nothing that they're aware of is helping. I've tried CBT, I've tried all the various counselling efforts and all that kind of thing, but nothing.
God, Lisa,
it's no difference. You don't know if it's going to come on or not, you know. But if anybody out there has ever been through it, I'd love to know.
Okay, well, look, Lisa, we're out of time. We'll put that out there. And if we get anything, we will certainly come back to this. It's a huge issue. We've absolutely inundated with calls about it. And I'll just repeat again, that book that we heard about earlier is by Dr. Áine Tuberty, and it's When Panic Attacks, and we believe it is available in Easons and maybe in other bookshops as well. But that is all we have time for today, and indeed for this week. The programme is produced by the series producer Lisa Marie Berry. The broadcast coordinator was Elaine Conlon. Aisling Grofferty was on sound. Stand by, Joe will be back with you on Monday, but stand by now for Ray Darcy.
0818 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.